each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. Father Tom Coyce, happy to be here with you again on The Winds of Change. That means it's Wednesday, and we are alive and ready to roll. I have so much in front of me here. As often is the case, I have to struggle to see what will I start with, what will we finish with, because it's important that I...
You just wrinkle my brain, man.
Wrinkle your brain. This is Wrinkle Your Brain Hour. Thanks. Nick is here. I miss Tony, my wonderful sidekick man.
It's very rare.
For all, and Tony, since you're not here, you know what I have to do.
I'm going to be more professional. That's what you're going to do.
Sorry, I had to put Tony in the punishment room. You know, he abandoned me here again. You know, what can I do? That's just the way it goes, Tony. I'll join you in there maybe sometime soon. You know, but that's
very good, Father.
That's the way. Indeed, indeed. I have to wrinkle your brain because my brain is wrinkled by watching the news and trying to figure out how the Holy Spirit wants to guide us through all the craziness that's going on in the world. For those who received my flock note, I mentioned that the theme of today's show comes from something I heard Cardinal George say a number of times, and I reflect on it quite often. And the more I live and the more things that happen in our world and in our church and our lives, the more I could see he was putting his finger on something very crucial. When he used to say that the church leads society, and I remember him saying that, and I remember thinking... Not that the society is following the church. When he was saying that the church is sort of a few steps ahead of what's going on in society, and especially some of the problems that we experience probably earlier, and in a kind of a focused intent of. Intensified way that society will follow us for good or for bad. Because I remember he said that the church kind of is in front of society, not in the sense of leading what the church says the society follows, but more like the church as a canary in a coal mine. I've always been fascinated with that description, right? The canary in a coal mine. I'm not a coal miner, although I have some good friends in Eastern Ohio. Father Jim Dunphy, if you're listening, God bless you and love you. He's out there in Eastern Ohio where there were many coal mines. I think there still are some. But... the object of the canary, the reason for the canary in the coal mine is because obviously underground there's so many different gases and what have you that are bad for human beings, and you can, well, even without the deadly gases, there's other difficulties, respiratory problems, of course, that many coal miners have had, just from the dust, as it were. No, but especially when oxygen or a certain lethal gases would start entering into a cave, a canary would die first before their lungs are so sensitive and so small. Just a little bit of a bad gas or lack of oxygen. So the coal miners would use the canary as a kind of an alarm system. And when the canary died, it's time to get out of the coal mine. So I share that with you today because I want to highlight some of the things that are a part of that, especially us Catholics, me being a priest, so enraptured in the Catholic Church and its culture and its life, I have my face in it more so than the general person on the street. Even the general person in the pew, and removed from that, the atheist, agnostic, non-religious person doesn't have even their finger in it, let alone their face in it, as it were. So it's a kind of a blessing that God gives to the world that the Catholic Church does experience some of the challenges that need to be fixed, shall we say. The difficulties need to be addressed. You could see that they will harm the church. And what is so important for us as people in a society that includes many others that are not of the church is that important lessons need to be learned from some of our difficulties. Important lessons have to be certain changes have to come about. Some of them are very difficult, and some of them are personally challenging, of course. But if they're not, then the Catholic Church being sucked out. Let's say that the Catholic Church dies in America. Then America will die. That's kind of a radical statement, and I firmly believe that. There are many who would say that's crazy. As a matter of fact, there are many who might say, in order for America to survive, we have to kill the Catholic Church. And that is something that we here at the Winds of Change don't believe in, and that's why we want to keep wrinkling your brain. So let's hope. Wait a minute.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Once again. Okay, that's the first one. Hopefully, we will wrinkle your brain the whole hour long. Indeed. And Tony, you could yell at the radio again, or any of the other wonderful people that help Father Bush. Right now, you're stuck with me. So, but since some people tell me that, you know, who listen to the show regularly, they say, how come you don't let Tony talk more? Or how come we don't have other... And I say, well, I got too much to say. But be that as it may, I want to investigate this theme here a little bit with you, this theme of the canary in the coal mine and what is going on in the church today. So... maybe I'll start with something I heard on the news this morning as I went to bed late last night, very anxious and then sad, because it wasn't till almost midnight that the Hawks lost their game to St. Louis. And I was pulling for our Blackhawks, and they didn't make it. They lost two in a row at the United Center. Isn't that just amazing? But sad as that is, a little incident happened toward the end, which I think points to this theme I'm trying to bring up and the reason why we have to pray hard, study hard, convert, and do all we can to follow the good Lord Jesus. Or else, as it were. Something at the end of the game happened. There was a penalty. I don't know if he got the penalty at the end of the game or during it. I heard it on the post-game show that as one of our guys was going to the penalty box, it was noticed that he had a gay slur. It sounded like he didn't... It was someone who was reading his lips, and it sounded... Or it looked like he was issuing a gay slur as he was going to the penalty box. And for that, he may face suspension, not just a penalty box. Now, we got to stop here for a moment, my friends. Obviously, the sports world is a big part of our world. It's a part that captures culture, part that leads culture. And can we stop and think about that for a moment? If he is suspended for what was not even a heard gay slur, but was interpreted by someone who reads lips to be a gay slur, then we're closer to the edge of annihilation or complete collapse as a nation that would have a sense of moral principles than we were a week ago. I've played a little hockey in my day, and I remember a lot of words that were used, and I'm sure they're more than what I even heard on a regular professional hockey team, especially when guys are fighting, especially when tempers are hot. And do I dare say that most likely the F word would probably slip out between two hockey players that are trying to punch each other's lights out. And they may get the penalty box. But as prevalent as that word is, it would have never gotten to the point that anybody in the official hockey world or in the TV world that televises the shows, the games and all, they would never say, wait a minute, did you hear that hockey player use the F word? That's a 3-game suspension. It wouldn't happen, and it hasn't happened, and I'm, even though I don't like the word, and I don't like cursing and swearing, and I try not to do it myself, and try to correct others who do, I would never think that a suspension, I would never think of trying to give a hockey player a suspension for using a curse word, especially the F word, as it were. But where have we come? Where are we today? That he may have said a gay slur is perhaps worthy of a suspension. What is going on here? Obviously, the F word is a way of degrading the marital act. Let's just say it that way. The marital act has always been and should always remain a holy, a sacred thing, a beautiful thing, a God-given thing, a thing, an action that creates the bond we call marriage. That someone would use the F word shows disrespect for that institution we call marriage. And as often as that word is used, and then we could say the institution has been ridiculed and insulted, shall we say, by using that word. A gay slur is doing, in the minds of the, shall we say, politically correct today, in the minds of those people, there's something worse going on. There's something worse going on than the insulting or the degrading or the desacralization of something that has been sacred, has something that has been holy and beautiful. what's going on is there's something new that's sacred. It's not the act itself that's sacred, but what is sacred is the rule. You don't make moral judgments about this aspect of life. This aspect of life must be the complete arena of personal freedom. This arena, this part of life, must be protected from any attempts to put judgment or value on its use or disuse, its perversion or lack of perversion. And even that word, perversion, would be enough to put me in the penalty box for a good 10 or 20 minutes, if not a 5-game suspension. But that's what that we have to see what's going on. I remember a couple years ago when the Los Angeles Kings won the Stanley Cup, the mayor of Los Angeles at the rally used the F word from the microphone, and the whole crowd, of course, cheered and screamed in approval. So these are key things that are going on that we have to be aware of, and we have to pray where and what can we do to have some effect, to call some attention, to take some people away from that cheering mood or that approval. What are we approving and what are we disapproving? So I got to come back to a few other, there's a whole lot of other ways I want to wrinkle your brain, my friends. But stay tuned. You're listening to Father Tom Coy sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Newsflash! This just in, Winds of Change podcast can now be heard on your iPhone and Android phone. Download the TuneIn Radio app and search Winds of Change, and Winds of Change will be right there for your very ears. We now return you to Winds of Change.
Hey, thank you there, Armand. God bless you for all you do to keep this wonderful show going. Father Tom Coy's here again with you. Before I continue to try to wrinkle your brain and to try to point out the gravity of the situation, our lives, our faith, our church, our nation is in, let's make a special prayer for Father Bush. We know that he's sick, and I'd like to read you one of the letters. Maybe some of you have gotten this, and especially those at St. Stanislaus Kostka. I'm pretty sure it was in your bulletin, but here's a letter from Father Bush to everyone thanking you for your prayers. He says, "Thank you for your prayers. I have felt the power and strength of your prayers these past couple weeks, and I am forever grateful. Please know that you remain in my thoughts and prayers as well. God's ways are indeed mysterious. I felt I was taken by force, snatched from the parish as Holy Week began on Palm Sunday. The days leading up to the surgery left me in a fog of sorts, and if not for a handful of people, I don't know that I would have survived. I couldn't think for myself. I was put through different tests and required no eating until Holy Thursday, when I began the final fast before the surgery on Good Friday. Unlike past Holy Thursdays, this year I knew just a little of what the Garden of Gethsemane may have been like for Jesus. On Good Friday, as I was rolled into the operating room, I asked what time it was. It was a quarter to noon, to 12. I knew in that moment the Lord was offering me a little share in his passion. I was sedated. He was not. The surgery lasted until 4 p.m. At this time, I simply entered into the mystery of it all. God is writing this story, and for my part, I'm trying to accept this as a time of grace and blessing. I was in the hospital a week after the surgery, and am now recuperating in a little convent in Minnesota. I'll meet with my doctors and an oncologist at the end of this month. From then, I'll know when and how the chemotherapy will take place. I've never known such fatigue, but I'm very slowly gaining strength. I was naive enough to believe that I would leave the hospital and get back into the work of life. But I learned all too quickly that after a major surgery, the body oppresses the spirit, forcing itself into a kind of repose. This has not been easy for me, but I have to accept the reality. Again, I thank all of you for your prayers. I have no worry about the parish, as I know that the parish is in good hands. My consolation right now is the silence of prayer and the liturgy of the hours. The Psalms, the Sacred Scripture, and the Office of Readings are filled with the joy of the Easter season, and I place my trust in the risen Lord, even as I count on your prayers for me. Have no doubt that you are deeply missed, and that you remain in my thoughts and prayers. One final point I wish to make. What I'm going through is nothing compared to what I've seen others suffer, but the experience has certainly given me a greater sensitivity to the suffering inherent in their lives and the lives of many of you who are no strangers to suffering. God bless you all. In the risen Christ, Father Anthony Bush, C.R., Pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka. Isn't that beautiful? That was a beautiful letter. Thank you, Father Bush. Perhaps if you are able to listen, many are storming heaven for you. We got to get you back healthy, and the Lord has a lot of work yet for you to do. You can't rest yet. There's no rest for the weary, the wicked, whatever that is, right? I don't want to call you wicked, but there's no rest for us this side of heaven. We keep going. So, anyways, my theme for today is I'm trying to open up a theme that I know many Catholics appreciate, but I'm afraid a lot of Catholics don't. And that is that our nation is in decline, in a moral decline. And that is often overshadowed by the issues of wealth and or, negatively speaking, poverty, the lack of money for people overshadows the issues of right and wrong in terms of moral right and wrong. And understandably so. I fully understand how deep worries about money challenge us. But we have to see, and we have to know that there's this other great decline, and that is a loss of moral principles, moral right and wrong, a moral compass, as we like to say. And if the country being in decline because of a broken moral compass, what I want us Catholics to especially know, but anyone of goodwill, and especially those who believe in Jesus Christ, but the Catholic Church has to lead the way, has to fix itself. That might sound like a strange thing. I think the Catholic Church has to fix itself, or else we won't be able to fix the nation. If we are not successful in fixing Catholicism, we won't be any good for the nation. If the nation doesn't have the blessing of the light that comes from Catholicism, the nation will collapse. Sad to say it that way, so bluntly, but there's a good number of people that feel this way, but think this way, but not nearly enough. I could just hear, perhaps, if this were a call-in show, people calling in to say, you're being just negative, you got to look at the positive, why are you emphasizing the dark side when we need uplifting, positive words, especially on a radio show like this. To which I would say, moral issues and these issues that touch on politics, of course, and ecclesiology, are the work of the church, the science of the church. They can be looked at either way, on a positive side and a negative side. But because a broken moral compass is part of a part of the problem, then we're not going to try to fix it unless we know it's broken. You don't take your car to a car mechanic just for the heck of it because everything's going well. Or you don't go to the doctor usually unless you're feeling some kind of ailment. And that's what I'm afraid is happening in our church. excuse me. A little burp there. But unless we could pinpoint and focus a bit more on the problems that our church has, then we won't attend ourselves to the positive forces that need to be set into place to help correct them. Is that clear? Oh, I hope so. let me shift again here too to some of the trends of Catholicism, that major trends, shall we say, that are a part of our recent past and that are hitting, that we in the Catholic Church have some sense of the good and the negative consequences that have come along with them. Like, for instance, let me go through a few. One of the Catholic trends is the ecumenical movement, right? Since Vatican II, the ecumenical movement is something that I'm certainly in favor of. I don't think you can be against an ecumenical movement if you read the scriptures and you see how the Lord Jesus at the Last Supper prayed that all be one in him, all be one, and that we cannot and we should not be insulting or persecuting those who do not share what we Catholics say, the fullness of the faith. So there has been, and a lot of blessings have come from an ecumenical movement. However, an unintended consequence of that has affected our church and thereby society at large a lot, is the idea that all religions then are equal. You can't judge or evaluate doctrines or liturgies or articles, poems, dissertations, and all that. There has to be an non-judgmental acceptance of all things theological. And I see a parallel in the political world, which is dominant, I think, both in the Democratic and the Republican Party, but I see it kind of fixed more in the Republican Party at this point, where it is common wisdom to say we have a big tent. We need a big tent. We have a big tent, and those with perhaps contrary or contradictory opinions can belong to this group, and that group then becomes a non-group. Right? Its meaning or its power is diminished. Well, I got to come back to a few more of these trends, and I got to get back into history too. I'm going to share with you some powerful words from John Adams, the second president. So stay with us, my friends. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
There is a lot going on at St. Stan's. St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, where you can obtain a plenary indulgence by visiting us during this year of mercy with the usual qualifications. Then, of course, there is Eucharistic adoration before the iconic monstrance, confessions 4 days per week, and masses in English, Polish, and Spanish. There's much more waiting for you here. St. Stan's is right off the Kennedy Expressway, just 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Find out more by going to ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org, and enter into the presence of Christ.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
What does the church have to say about in vitro fertilization and surrogate motherhood? These questions are answered by Father Thomas J. Loya and Dr. Robert Fowler, M.D., Thursday, April 21st at 7 p.m. Science. At Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church, 14610 Wilcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois. That's Thursday night at 7, April 21st at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church, 14610 Wilcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois. Directions, visit ByzantineCatholic.com and click on the About Us tab. Sponsored by the multi-parish Respect Life Ministries of St. Bernard's, St. Francis of Assisi, Our Lady of the Woods, St. Michael, and Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Hope to see you out at Father Loya's church way down there in Homer Glen tomorrow night, Thursday night, for that talk on in vitro fertilization with Dr. Robert Lawler. A great mind and a personal friend. God love them. God bless them both. So what I'm trying to do in this hour, in the process of wrinkling your brain, is to lay before you some bad news and the importance of the true good news. The bad news is that oftentimes the Catholic Church plays the role of the canary in the coal mine. Some of the bad things that have happened to us are foreshadows of what can and will happen in the culture at large. So I mentioned before the break the ecumenical movement that came into the Catholic Church, which I say, and I repeat again, that I'm all in favor for, and I think it's a great part of the gospel message. But the way it sometimes is approached is that theology is irrelevant, or you can't judge between doctrines or sacraments or the practices, that all has to be equal. And I pointed to the fact that I think there's a sort of sadness or a difficulty in the political world where platforms, the party is a big tent, and we can have lots of people with differing opinions. And obviously that's true to a certain extent, but the more you get to the central issues that do not lend themselves to intelligent and intelligent or wise disputes among people, then you're losing the battle. And I see more interest within the Republican debates than I see within the Democratic debates these days. There's less of an attempt to find true and good policies within the Democratic Party, I must say. It seems like the fire and the enthusiasm all spreads from just not being Republican. But though I see great debate and great controversy and great difficulty within the Republican Party as well, but at least they seem to be trying to knock out a workable plan or a strategy, not just being against Democrats, but trying to show what works the best, what helps the most. And so I'm a little worried about our political landscape of today. Just maybe an aside, today is the day after Donald Trump won the New York primary, and he's one more step closer to becoming the nominee for the Republican Party. I don't want to get too political here on this show, but making curt references to what's going on today, I think, is part of what our faith calls us to do. So I share this with you in that spirit. The one thing that I think we have to be careful about is the kind of conservatism that Trump represents, especially lacks the kind of conservatism that touches on the morality that deals with marriage. He avoids that issue and those issues quite firmly. And in that, I have to say, I don't think we can fix our society unless we try to fix the family, unless we try to fix marriages, unless we try to fix this sacredness of this institution not created by America, or any of the founders, any of the presidents, any politician, or anyone throughout any of nations' histories. But it is so foundational. And so I don't think it can be corrected. The problems of sexual morality, I think, can only be fixed if it comes from the leadership of Catholics. There, I said it. That's just a hard truth, even though all of us who call ourselves Catholics would have to admit that we're flawed human beings just like anyone else. And to say we have to correct the issues of sexual ethics requires a belief that it's the Lord's ways that we're rejecting, and not just the Supreme Court's ways, or even the U.S. Congress's ways, those noble political institutions. They have to be led by something above or beyond or outside of themselves. So anyways, the ecumenical movement that has been part of the recent Catholic Church history, I think, is having its effect on the world around us. Also, let me say this too, and I may get myself in a little trouble, but again, I hope it helps to wrinkle your brain and helps to point out some things that we need to work on. Obviously, another major trend in the Catholic Church since Vatican II has been the the promotion of lay ministers in many aspects of the church. And again, I am all for lay ministers in the church, and I welcome and to try to do my best to get as many lay people involved in many of the church ministries as I can. However, there's another unintended consequence that we're facing because of that, and that is the inevitable lowering of standards, or the general lack of when a lay person steps up and starts to get more involved in church, they're doing something noble, they're providing a great service, hopefully they're growing in faith, hope, and love, but they often don't have the wherewithal, the educational background, and even sometimes the moral flaws. They can be in the priest as well, but they can be in lay people as well too, and in both areas, both lay and clergy, it brings down the church. I was discussing just the practice of teenagers being Eucharistic ministers with a friend, and I mentioned that I wasn't so much in favor of having the teenagers be Eucharistic ministers at a parish. Perhaps in a Catholic high school or college, university, of course, I think it'd be a bit of a different story. But in a parish especially, even a virtuous young teenager, he may be more virtuous and more saintly in many ways than many of the people receiving communion, but that part of life known as adolescence is often fraught with adolescent indiscretions and the sins of youth, and therefore it can be a disturbing distraction to people receiving communion. And that general loss, shall we say, of the higher quality minister reminds me a little bit of what's going on in the society at large. When I watch Waters World, if anybody knows what that is, Waters, there's a guy on Fox News that often does street interviews, kind of like what Jay Leno used to do at jaywalking, and he would go around and ask some pretty basic questions to people on the street, and it was just funny or sad the way so many people, even going through high school and college, don't know some of the things that in my generation we kind of take as simple and basic things that everyone should know. Anyways, these are things that I'm pointing to in our culture, and I'll just repeat again, we need to fix our Catholic Church in order that we might help fix our nation. And without doing so, we're doomed. And so let's pray a little bit harder, a little bit more frequently, and a little more sincerely. I'm Father Tom Coyles. I'm sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You've been listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Who am I? What does it mean to love? Why was I created? We'll address all of these great questions and more at Echo Chicago this June. Hello, I'm Dawn Fitzpatrick, Respect Life Director for the Archdiocese of Chicago. Echo Chicago is a Theology of the Body summer camp for teens and young adults. For the first time ever, the Archdiocese is partnering with Dumox Ministries to present a week of prayer, fun, and immersion in the teachings of St. Pope John Paul II. This exciting camp will take place at Benedictine University in Lisle, June 24th to the 30th. Registration is now open. Go to respectlifechicago.org or call 312-534-5355 for more information. That's respectlifechicago.org or call 312-534-5355. All of us feel an echo in our heart to explore God's original creation and His true purpose for us. Join us in June for Echo Chicago.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Father Tom Coyce here. Hoping I'm not depressing you too much, but hoping to lift your hearts to a greater level of participation in our faith because of the challenges and difficulties we face, and because our nation itself is in a time of moral decline. I have to say something too about that. Remember last, it's going to lead, we're running out of time, but remember last year, for some of you who know me, and I did at St. James of the Sag Parish a little historical play that was a rendition of two bishops on the slavery issue during the Civil War. And in doing research for that little historical play, I found a frustration, a kind of frustration that I think it's inevitable, but let me point it out anyways. Doesn't mean I'm going to condemn the church, but I find by no means, but I found it frustrating that I couldn't find a good strong sermon by a Catholic bishop against slavery. Obviously, slavery during the Civil War time was the great controversial issue. And I found a number of Protestant sermons by Protestant ministers on both sides of the slavery issue, some pro and some anti, but at least there were some anti-slavery sermons by many Protestant ministers. But I couldn't find the same with the Catholic hierarchy. And the reason I say this is because one of the great challenges today is for our hierarchy to help correct that broken moral compass. And the silence that we're too often accustomed to is part of the problem, shall I say. I was listening to a bishop on a YouTube talk, and I'm not going to say who it was. It's not important. The bishop was saying that the engaging the culture, he finds the topics of, let's see, he made four topics that oftentimes the anti-Catholic or the irreligious like to throw at Catholic people. One was, he said, God, just God versus atheism. Another was the Bible. How can you believe a book is written by God? The other was the issues of violence, that the church is especially an instrument of violence as opposed to an antidote to violence. Can't remember the fourth one at this point. But what he added was that the issues of sexual morality are not what people are arguing about today. And I had to stop and think for a minute that they may not be arguing about the, like, and even mentioned about birth, he used the term birth control instead of artificial contraception, which whenever I bring up the topic, I like to point out the importance of those two different words. Just to say that birth control, the church is against birth control, is inaccurate. To say where we oppose artificial contraception is more accurate, because natural family is a form of birth control that doesn't use artificial contraception. Okay, got that? But he said that those the issues of marriage and the sexual morality that revolves around it is not what the atheists, the agnostics, the people who have left the church are interested in talking about. And I believe they're probably not interested in talking about it, but they're not interested in talking about it because they've made such a decision in their own hearts and minds that they think there's nothing to discuss. It's the church has to be wrong because they're so convinced of the new principles of the sexual revolution of the 60s, shall we say. And that attitude by the bishop that says let's not address those issues, or it's not important that we address the issues of marital morality, I think is, I'm sorry to say it, but that's part of the problem. If we don't address it, they only get bigger. Think of the stories in the Bible, even where they're so often those who are put in jail or executed have something to do with marital sexual morality. John the Baptist, of course, he was martyred because he was speaking against King Herod's marriage situation. Or that the two old men in the book of the story of Susanna, I think it is, who accused they wanted to rape her and she refused, and then they turned against her, and they testified that she was with someone else, and they scared the would-be rapist away, and so she's lying, and then young Daniel interrogates them and finds that they were lying, so he has the punishment that they were trying to inflict on her and inflicted on them. So often you can't avoid the issues of marital morality, and that's what we're avoiding. And let me, with that, with a little bit of time left, I'd like to start a another part of the my theme here. I've been reading more about John Adams, our second president, and Thomas Jefferson, our third president, because I'm working on another historical play for our little historical parish of St. James this summer. Instead of having two Catholic bishops from the Civil War time go at each other, we're going to have Thomas Jefferson and John Adams not go after each other, but show their attempts to reconcile with one another. It's a beautiful part of American history that I really wasn't aware of, but I want to bring it to more people's attention, because you may not realize it, but John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, of course, became very good friends during the American Revolution. There was a spirit of finding new independence, breaking off from the power of the king back in England, that brought these two very different men together, and we have to take our hats off, or our wigs if we lived in the 18th century, to these great men. And they wrote so many wonderful things. And I want to uphold them as great men, but then look for some of the cracks in the armor, so that we might be able to fix and strengthen our nation for the next 200 years. Thomas Jefferson and John Adams then became bitter enemies during their presidencies. just to paint with broad brushes here, for those who may not be as much into American history as perhaps American history teacher would be, or at least an avid reader of such. I don't claim to be an official historian, but I just like to read. And so Thomas Jefferson was more of a let's let all the states, and let's have a very weak national government, federal government, because people are generally good, and we don't have to worry so much about controlling them. We give them more freedom, or as much freedom as is humanly possible, and things will go well. That's one part of Thomas Jefferson's outlook. John Adams, on the other hand, had a deeper sense of the flawedness of human nature and was more of an advocate of a strong federal government so that there may be laws which anticipate some of the inevitable conflicts. That's one aspect. And the issues of money and the way the economy ran and all the rest could be brought in. But so Thomas Jefferson and John Adams became very bitter enemies. John Adams was the second president, and he was running against Thomas Jefferson, and of course lost because John Adams only had one term. Part of the reason why John Adams lost, I truly believe, is a testimony to his greatness, and I wish he was more appreciated in our American heritage culture. I wish his face was on Mount Rushmore as well. I'm going to take up a collection someday in my parish to see if we can get his face chiseled onto Mount Rushmore. Might take a lot of collections. Anyways, part of why John Adams lost that his second term was because the French and the English were starting to fight each other, and both France and England, and especially France, since France helped the colonies defeat Britain in the War of Independence, were more of the allies of the early colonists. And so a lot of colonists wanted the United States to jump in the war with Britain on France's side. John Adams said, "We are way too new of a nation. We got to work on solidifying our own nation. We got to stay out of this war." And his advisor said, "Well, then Thomas Jefferson's going to win, because he's much more pro-France, and everybody knows it." And Adams said, "I won't do it for political. I won't sell our nation short just to win office." What a noble thing to hear a politician like that say. There's so many good lessons that we need to learn from American history, and where I find Catholic principles, I'm going to point them out to you. And where I find the kinks in the armor, which are often anti-Catholic or disobedience of our Catholic way, I'll point those out to you. Well, you've been listening to Winds of Change, listener-supported WNDZ. I'm Father Tom Coyes. God bless you.
So sweet on the fence, can you see? Can you see? Meaningless thought, the shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now, the winds have changed. Read the signs, no time to hide. The winds have changed. To say when right from wrong has become so obscure, it does not take that long. Can you see?